welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an extremely, well, going to be extremely awesome episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, because I have one of my favourite people who describes all of my least favourite people. His name is Thomas Sheridan, and he's an expert on psychopaths. Welcome to the show, bro, again.
Hey, Vinnie, it's good to be back.
It is indeed. What has been going on in your life since last time we had you on, mate?
Oh, just about everything and nothing at the same time. Usual stuff. The world is still full of psychopaths, unfortunately. But, however, you know, we have them. They're being identified. We're picking them out. And that's the good thing. You know, for the first time ever, large numbers of people are aware. And they're having to work a little. The psychopaths, that is, are having to work a lot harder to hide their camouflage.
Well, in what way do you mean that? How are psychopaths having to hide harder even more now?
They're trying to normalize the subject. There's a lot of books and magazine articles have come out on them in the mainstream about it. See, before people like me and some others started bringing this out within the alternative media, it really only was discussed in academic circles. And things like, you know, criminal psychology, stuff like that. There was nothing really in the mainstream. And then, so because the alternative media sort of like, you know yourself, it kind of is the trailblazer for subjects that are picked up later. The mainstream always co-opts these subjects and tries to twist them around to their agenda. You know, they try to like say, oh, they'll deny it forever. You know, they'll deny it forever. They'll say it's not true. And then suddenly when it's undeniable, especially people like myself and others are using their own science against them. Well, what they then try to do is they try to change, you know, move the goalposts. So what they're doing now is they're trying to make out that psychopaths are okay, you know, they're everything that these people like myself are saying they are. Yes, your science is correct. Yes, you're using our own science. Yes, they exist. But however, everything we have in this world, it's thanks to psychopaths. Psychopaths are the innovators. They don't care. They're the ones who win wars. They're the ones who made all the decisions that build civilization. They're unbelievably sexy. They're, you know, why do you think we love James Bond and so on? We need psychopaths to be trauma surgeons. We need psychopaths to be statesmen. We need psychopaths to be military generals who disregard human suffering, who disregard human pain, to disregard human emotions in order to get the job done. And this is very much where they're trying to take it now. So, yes, there's a victory.
Did you
there.
Know, speaking of that, speaking of doctors needing to be psychopaths, did you know that if you have the letters MD after your name, you're statistically 11 times more likely to be a serial killer?
Yeah, the Kevin Durant, he was a evolutionary psychologist at the University College London. He wrote a book called The Wisdom of Psychopaths. It's actually a pretty good book, and he's basically selling the argument that psychopaths are useful in society. But he gave a list of, from a very comprehensive survey he did in the university, on the fields that were the highest rates of psychopathy, and medical surgeons were very high near the top, right up there with CEOs. You know, so it's a, you know, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, the other element is, of course, when you describe psychopaths, I think the American Medical Journal did this, and I say this on the show regularly, but it bears repeating. A psychopath, according to the American Medical Journal, and I believe this was in 2006, said that they are smiling, enchanting people when you first meet them, but don't really have a whole lot of depth to their character. Very few, if any, long-lasting relationships outside of a pretext like work. And they don't really care about anybody else other than themselves. You know, when I first read that, I think to myself, Frank, it's like every employer I've ever had.
Yes, that's a very good description. Incredibly glib, incredibly superficial. It's one of the first things you notice about them. you say to yourself, there's something quite not right with this person here. They're a bit too touchy-feely. Now, there are genuine, decent people who are kind and forward, but psychopaths, there's a shallowness there. And it's also, it makes you feel uneasy. There's something not right there. It triggers your intuition. And that's absolutely true. They can be very, very superficially charming and glib until they no longer have a use for you, or they got you where you wanted, and then it changes. Then you start to see the real personality behind there. See, what they do is they invent a persona to manipulate you, and specifically targeted for your personality and, you know, whatever the situation is. So they make, you know, that's why they move up so fast in big business, particularly in things like middle management. I mean, they just cluster up there. It's because it's an ideal thing. And, you know, being a phony works, and they're the ultimate phony.
Is there really anything real about them? And more to the point, how do psychopaths see themselves? How do they define themselves as people?
They have a God complex. They're aware that they're very different, and they are aware they're different from the time they're kids. They see other kids crying over pets, or their grandmother dies, or they, you know, other kids, when a kid falls in the playground, the other kids will be feeling, helping him and that kind of thing. And they don't get that. They don't understand why people are worrying about people that mean nothing to them. And so they learn to mimic and fake human emotions. They always talk about this sense of feeling empty inside. A lot of them will talk about a sense of that they don't feel like they're actually inside their own bodies. Not all of them, but that's quite a common thing you will hear. A sense of, you know, a void inside them. On top of that, it's an ego gone wild. You know, the ego, they really do all think they're the king of the world, or, you know, that's why so many of them are drawn to sort of like religious positions and stuff like that. They really do see themselves as a god or something special. You know, if they enter into a religion, or they start a religion or so a sect or something, they'll actually believe that they're the only one on the planet who's actually communicating with some kind of super beings. You know, there's a lot of that kind of thing goes on with them. So, you know, coupled with the sense of emptiness is a tremendous belief that they're like, you know, some kind of living God at the same time. And they don't care about other people because they only see other people as objects. Another human being to them, even if they're married to one or have them as children, it's like hammer, screwdriver, cheeseburger, boyfriend, you know, that kind of thing. It's just, you're just simply an object to them. There's nothing else there. They just see other people as devices to be used in order to furnish their own ego and their own, you know, needs in life.
So let's say you come up and you help one of them, like with a radio program or something like that, and you're hosting it with them for like a month or whatever, and then you just say, oh man, it's too much work, I've got to go, and then they start abusing the living heck out of you and trying to destroy your life.
Oh, that's very common. That's happened to me in business as well. You know, I've had my business career as well, and I can honestly say it's those things have been done to me. You know, I've you know, very strange, like, you know, inviting out to lunch or going for beers afterwards with them until they had you in the position they wanted. And then when they didn't need you anymore, or they found another person that could do the job for less money or whatever, it's quite startling how they will change. Again, like I just said, you're just a machine or an object to them. That's very common with a psychopath. They all do that. They'll even do that with like people they marry and things like that. It's really quite disturbing that they will marry someone to get like half their savings, or, you know, just to live with them. And as soon as they have them where they want them, even I've heard stories of even after the honeymoon, the minute the honeymoon ended, a completely different creature emerged because legally he had her, you know, he didn't have to play the game anymore.
Okay. Well, can I also think, I also think that the other element to explore here is just how exactly to spot these people and identify them before getting into relationships, business, or otherwise with them. What exactly are the warning signs that you could notice for? Because they're not going to, like, break character, as it were, right in front of you and make it real obvious until it's already too late. How do you spot it beforehand?
Well, the initial, you know, warning sign, as you put it, would be that they your intuition just knows something's not right. You know, I'm not saying that guy you were speaking to and told me about just now is a psychopath, but I'm sure when you first met them, if you're any person you know now you think is a psychopath, your initial intuition was like, something not right here. But they make an offer, or they are very charming, or they could be good looking, they could be sexy, or they could be fun, and you switch off your intuition. And that intuition is very important, because that comes from when we were, you know, when we were cavemen, or, you know, when we were spearing fish in the woods and in the lake and stuff like that, and we had to have our senses in case there was a saber-toothed tiger or something behind us. And we've lost that mainly because of education knocks us into the whole left brain thing, and we lose our, we've lost that sort of background vision that, you know, that warns us against predators. This is why psychopaths are almost non-existent within indigenous societies. You know, they just don't exist, because they'll probably kill them all when they're teenagers and stuff like that, as soon as they figure them out, because they're too risky to the tribe. But because the local indigenous people would have that knowledge, would have this awareness, this background awareness, because they're far more in touch with nature than we are. And that's the first one. Now, it's very common that they might offer you jobs and money and stuff, and you say, you know, well, I've got to pay bills, so you might bypass that. Well, I would say to people, like, if you've got that, you know, something not right here kind of sensation, well, just keep a note of things and watch them, observe them. You know, you don't have to be paranoid about it. You just be sort of like, you know, you don't have to be, you know, spying on them and things like that. But watch them and watch little things.
Look at it this way. If you've got a pet dog who's a Rottweiler, it's a very nice dog, but you'd be careful around it just in case.
Exactly.
Because he might bite your head off.
That's a very good analogy, because that's exactly what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a predator. But you will see things like, you should watch things like, now this is, just because I'm saying they do this doesn't mean they're psychopaths. I'm just saying they could be. But things to look out for would be their eyes. Their eyes can be very telling, because they're constantly in a sense in a state of hypervigilance, just like a wild animal. And they're constantly, they're not worried, but it's almost like a predatory reptilian fear or something. It's like very animalistic. And you'll see their eyes dashing around, particularly at moments of stress. Their eyes will widen like a predator, or they'll be dashing around scanning. If you went into, say, a business meeting and there was a lot of people there they didn't know, you will see them scanning around the room, not just like a way a normal person does, where you have an inquisitive look at it, say a pretty girl or a guy over there, you might tell yourself, he looks like a bit of a creep or something like that. It's very different. You see them, they're scanning. They're constantly scanning, but they're pretending not to scan. That's a very good one to look out for. Another one to look out for is if they've done something wrong and you're aware they've done something wrong, and you get the feeling that they pulled a fast one on you, no matter how small it is, you will notice they do a thing called duper's delight. It's caused by a rush of adrenaline. This happens to a lot of people, but in psychopaths, they get an enormous rush of adrenaline in their prefrontal cortex. And what it does is it makes them have a smirk. Look out for that smirk. It's more than just like a happy kind of fun smirk that people have. It's a real, like, the hell with you kind of smirk. And they'll look away, and they'll actually walk away from you as if they're like laughing at you and things like that. It could be over something very small now, you know, but you'll see if they do that more than once, and there's an element of passive aggressiveness to it. That's another thing to watch out for, the smirk. The smirk is very telling. Also, when they smile, it's a fake smile. There's no real sincerity in it. And you notice that their eyes don't smile, because you know when you smile, so many muscles are activated in your face, large numbers of muscles. But in
I have noticed that smirk on the face of cops who have shoved me.
There you go. Yeah, the duper's delight, the adrenaline rush. They're all, yeah, there you go. And the one is that when they smile, the smile is like, you know, a ventriloquist dummy, where ventriloquist dummies have a painted-on smile, or the Joker smile, but the eyes aren't kind of going up. They're not making crow's feet at the side. They're sort of the same. That's a one to look for, because that's not a real smile. That's a fake smile.
Well, yeah, that's something. I've got a picture of John Key on my wall, and I noticed that, in fact, I heard that that crow's feet at the eyes thing, because, like, when your mouth smiles and it's a real smile, your eyes smile too at the same time. They close up, And I have never seen the Prime Minister John Key ever smile for real, kind of thing. And here's the other element. Can these people ever actually feel proper happiness or contentment?
No, it's not the same thing. They get a rush. They get a rush when they pull a fast one on us, and when they get their way, it's almost like a kid, a giddiness. You know, say a kid, it's a little kid when they throw a temper tantrum and get what they want. That's not real happiness. That's just a kind of a chemical reward system in the brain, because the child's brain hasn't fully developed yet until, you know, they haven't developed, you know, real cognitive awareness until they're about 7 or 8, you know, in terms of, you know, behavioral interaction with human beings. So they have that all their lives. So what they get is a rush. It's an infantile kind of thing. No, they don't have a feeling of happiness. But at the same time, too, they don't have a feeling of misery and depression. That doesn't exist either. It's almost like a neutral, empty state.
Okay. So if they're feeling empty, what is it that really gets them off? What is it that they want? Because everybody wants something.
Well, psychopaths are only interested in two things, power and control, nothing else. And everything they achieve in their life is a result of the desire or the thrust to gain power and control over others. That's it, nothing else.
Just like the Dark Lord of the Sith. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
I find your lack of faith in psychopathy disturbing.
Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Thomas Sheridan, and you can check out his website, thomassheridanarts.com. And and his book, I think, have you got two books out now? I think, but one of them anyway is Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, which I believe should be available if you Google it, find out where the heck it is. Is it available off the website, bro?
It's available off anywhere. It's not on the website, though, but you can get it anywhere. I've got three books now. The other one is Defeat the Demons, and the new one is The Anvil of the Psyche.
Okay. Would you like to talk about the new one?
Yeah, the new one is about it kind of follows on from the psychopathic thing. I used to be a communications consultant in Wall Street. I used to work for Goldman Sachs and a few other banks. So I was schooled in the education of how to deceive people through manipulation of data and graphic design and how you can change language in order to sell something that isn't real to people. So that book is me kind of blowing the whistle on how that's all done to us, how they use symbolism and how they use wordplay and how they actually altered, you know, the terms of reference in a financial document or even in, you know, an actual report to make it sound like something it isn't, coupled with a history of basically, you know, social mind control through entertainment.
So they taught you how to deceive without lying.
Oh, yes. Without lying, it's just quite brilliant how to manipulate graphical data. And I remember one of the first things I did, and this was like it was actually a launch for a share option for a former public utility, and I think it was somewhere in Belgium or somewhere, to sell stocks in this thing. And the chart, I was told to change the scales on the chart to make it look like the returns were much more vertical. You know what I mean? There was a lot more money there and the x-axis. And I said, there's no way you can do this. This is like unethical. And the actual banker was saying, no, it isn't. Just do it. People don't read it. And if you put it in a glossy format in a nice book with like nice graphic design and pictures and happy smiling faces, they ignore it. So it is very psychopathic, actually, when you think about it. Well, that's what big business is, really.
Well, as I mentioned, the American Medical Journal there, they said that there's three likely places that these people will gravitate to. You said they want control and power. Well, this is interesting dovetail here then. Business, media, and politics. Well, business, entertainment, and politics, rather.
Yes, that's what
rules the three. Before. What are the three base power structures that control society and influence it?
Yep. And even the big pharma and the medical and the biotech, that's under business as well now. They're not like separate fields. So, yeah, that's exactly it. The triad of psychopathic control right there. That's where they want to be. That's where they want to rule the room and race from.
Yeah. I feel a song coming on. It's where you want to be, way down in Kokomo, or something like that, bro. You know? Can we also think about making fun of these people? What happens if you get one over them?
Well, they don't have a very good sense of humor. And that's something I've always been quite good at. Like, I've actually got quite a wicked sense of humor. And I've been blessed with that. You know, it's actually helped me survive in life. But, you know, so, you know, they don't get it. So you could actually really, you know, pull a fast one on them. If it's good humor, if it's like really good satire, they do not get it. They just don't have that depth. But if they found out that you were doing that, oh, they will just, you know, it's just like it's World War III coming your way. There's no level to which they will sink. This is why I tell people, don't ever try to out-psychopath a psychopath. Do not do it. Do not try to beat them. They will absolutely go to levels of depravity and evil that you could not even begin to imagine. The best thing is just to ignore them or just get away from them. But yeah, a good way to send them up, you know, probably on a big level, you know, is to do a true satire. Very good way of doing it. They don't get it. They just don't get it.
Well, once they caught on to the fact that you're not in their game anymore, what if you have information on them or whatever, but you're not planning on releasing it or anything? Would they just kind of like attack you anyway, just because you might hurt them?
Oh, they'll kill you. No, they won't do it directly, but they'll destroy your life. They'll do things like plant child porn on your computer at work. They do things like that. They will do things like spread rumors around the office about you, saying that you were in prison for rape when you were younger. They will, you know, other ones will create websites and fill these websites with like smear campaigns against you, telling all kinds of lies. And what they want you to do is to confront them. They want you to stand up for yourself. They want you to fight them. What that does then is that they will stay as calm as anything while you're saying like, how could you do that? You know, you're losing your temper and you're saying, that's disgusting what you did. They will then use that and they'll be very calm. They'll be like, excuse me, are you feeling well? I'm sorry, but I think you have mental problems. You know, oh, it's very frightening. I mean, I can tell
you. Which is even more frustrating.
Well, that's the idea, because they're like robots. Remember I said that they're emotionally neutral. And there you are, all like, the, you know, you're all your hormones and everything flying, your neurotransmitters, and you're feeling depressed and everything, and you're getting angry, and they're sitting there as calm as pie with a smirk on their face, and there's nothing you can do about it, and they're just sucking the energy dry out of you like a vampire or something. That's where the vampires come from. And so it's really horrific. I'm telling you, Vinny, I've actually, when you deal with this subject like I have, to the level that I've gone to it, to the individuals I've had to interview, to the experiences I've had, it really is like stepping into hell and dealing with the demons. There's a real demonic aspect to them. This is not a subject that people should engage with lightly. I mean, yeah, we should all know this stuff. It's good stuff to know. But it's only for some of us to go into the labyrinth, you understand, and really get the hardcore information and bring it out. Because, you know, you have to be, you know, even I, there's elements of my life now I've regretted that I've actually gone and done this, because they've been just so vicious to, you know, and if they, even if they don't do anything to you, they will damage you just by their presence. You know, they can be so toxic. And so it's almost like the, you know, in ancient times we had shamans and druids who used to go into the trances, into the demon world, to like clean out the society before it entered this one. It's almost like we've lost that today, and we're actually a very much worse society for the loss of those traditions, because that's what kept us clean in the past, was these forces that they could, you know, there really is, you know, I don't talk, you know me, I try to keep it as straight up as much as possible, but it's absolutely a spiritual aspect to this. I can actually honestly say that now. And it's really, it's It's to one of people's. I've had people email me and say, "Oh, there's this a-hole at work, and you know, he's definitely a psych." And then he'd give me the description of what they did, and the guy would be a psychopath because I'd be reading what this guy wrote about him. And then he says, "I'm going to teach him a lesson. I'm going to confront him on Monday morning." And I'd be instantly emailing back, "Do not do that. Do not do that. You know, you have a wife and kid. Do not do this. He will." Eat you alive, and you'll be tortured by this for the rest of your life for years to come. So
you talked about very evil things. You talked about how spirits and shamans and things like that would identify or cleanse these things from. Like the way you're telling it, the only way to stop these people from doing evil things is to kill them. That's the only way to actually get anything back on them. Without them destroying your life is to actually get them taken off this plane of existence, because otherwise, if they're still alive, they will destroy your life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not advocating violence or anything like that. Don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying we should kill them.
My point is, Thomas, that most ordinary people would never, ever, under any circumstances, kill anybody. So the only possibility is to just keep this fracker away from, you know, keep this fracker out of my life.
They will kill you to get your apartment. If you have a nicer apartment in a building than they do, say it's overlooking the river or something like that, they will hire a hitman to have you. They'll pay a couple of junkies in the street to stab you. That's what you're dealing with. That's how dark it is. And it's just business. There's no emotions. I want that apartment overlooking the river. That guy upstairs, you know, I'll get rid of him. Two junkies that hang out the corner to kill him. That's what it's like.
Yeah. Have you suffered real, like, mental, emotional trauma just finding out about these kind of behaviors?
I can actually say I've been damaged by it, actually. I've actually been, well, I wouldn't say trauma. I'd say I fear for the human race. It'd be better if I never knew about it on some levels. I walk through town and I'll see kids and stuff, and I'll wonder about, you know, when the way the world, you know, the world's fallen into their hands. It really has. You know, you look at something like Monsanto, you know, just look at that one company alone, what its agendas are. And you walk down the street and I just see kids and I say, like, okay, a lot of these kids at one point in their life as adults will probably encounter one of these. Some of these kids will. And that's bad enough. But then it dawns on you the things of, like, Monsanto. I don't want to get too depressing or anything, but this is the world we live in. We have to deal with this. You know, it's not all puppies and kittens and peace, love and light by any measure. But yeah, I would say it's actually, you know, Carl Jung in the Red Book, he wrote something that was very poignant to this. He said, if you go to hell, you will become hell unless you remember where you came from, which is like saying, you know, if you deal with this subject, it can make you so upset and make you start to think there's psychopaths everywhere. You have to remember that you came from an empathic place. You came from the person you were, the happy-go-lucky guy you were before you entered it. Because, I mean, the story, you know, it's not that the psychopaths have much damaged me. It's the stories from people of what they've been put through has, like, it started to, it has definitely affected me. There's just, I knew it was a problem. I knew it was a problem in business. I just had no idea at the magnitude of the amount of suffering that the human race endures at the hands of these monsters. It really is an unspoken Holocaust.
It occurs to me when you're talking about spiritual aspects, demons, etc., the term black and white comes to mind. Like, black meaning evil, white meaning good. Not in a racist sense of the word, of course. I know that some people get on with that. But here's the point as well. If these evil psychopaths exist, they have no empathy whatsoever, they only want power and control. Is there an antithesis mindset or mental condition to that?
Yes, there is. We have to remember that they are the tiny minority. At the very, very most, they're 4%, and so that would be in, like, business and stuff like that. In most of our lives where we live, it's 1%. So the antithesis to it is our human creativity, our imagination, our desire to achieve in our lives in terms of like doing things not only to provide a good life for ourselves, but also for the people we love and our families and our, you know, our close friends. We want to share our goodness with them. That the emphasis is to the whole thing is creativity. More and more I understand this. Psychopaths are terrible at creativity. They're devious, they're sneaky, they're manipulative, but they can't come up with anything new. They don't even have their own personalities. It's like in that movie.
Do they steal other people's ideas, convince people that it's their idea in the first place, and then steal other people's personality traits and then claim to everybody, I'm just like this guy, in order to manipulate you?
Yes, well, I was going to say in the movie, The Talented Mr. Ripley with Matt Damon, it's a fantastic portrayal of a psychopath. He says in one of the lines, he says, I'd rather be a fake nobody than a fake somebody than a real nobody. And that's what they're like. They will steal people's personalities. It's happened to me. I think it was an advertising agency I worked in, and I came up with, there was one guy there, again, very glib at first, was, you know, trying to make me friends with me, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I came up with this sort of, it was like an intro for the company. It was like it was a very basic sort of like digital video program. This was back in the 90s, and it looked really good. And, he stayed up all night in the company. This is what they do in the office working. And he basically took my actual programming on this. It was actually Macromedia Director, which, and then he took the files, put his own graphic and his own design on it, and then emailed it to the boss the next morning of the communications department saying, look what I came up with during the night. And then it was a big meeting in the office at like 10, and the guy was shown, look at this new intro we have for the CDs and the DVDs. And he completely had stolen my idea overnight. And I looked at him, and he just looked at me, and his eyes were like, they were like a shark. He was saying to me, if you open your mouth now, you're dead. And that's what you're dealing with.
It's complete, total, utter scumbaggery.
Scumbaggery would be a nice way of putting it. It's so twisted and so cold and so dark. I mean, I've been calling it the deepest of all shadows lately, but it really is. It's just...
The word evil springs to mind.
Oh, it's real, evil.
Real, palpable, measurable, unequivocal, fracking evil. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like with horns and a devil and a pointy fork thingy. Just that bad. We'll be right back.
Well, if they were that visual, it would be great. But it's like, it's like horror.
Time to break. We'll be right back.
Look at me driving and I won't stop.
Welcome back.
It feels so good to be alive.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that talks about subjects where others fear to tread. Have you ever listened to mainstream talk radio? My God, it's freaking boring. It's like they're talking about sport, or they're talking about some kind of murder that happened to one person in one part of the country that doesn't mean anything, isn't actually inclusive of any indicative scumbaggery, doesn't really teach you anything about the human freaking condition. That's what all news and talk shows have really become, in my opinion. Something that doesn't actually teach you anything. It just wastes your fracking time. If you spend 5 days a week listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen, I can assure you that every day you will learn something that is valuable in your life. That's why we get on such really awesome guests, because, hey, I'm only 28. I know bugger all about life, admittedly. That's why we get on a whole lot of more experienced people with a wealth of knowledge that far exceeds my own, so that you can learn something. All right. And I can too. If you're capable of supporting that endeavor, please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Donate or subscribe for a couple of bucks a month. Or if you're capable and you want to, there's also some survival gear and things of that nature on the homepage available for you there. And I will soon be, if I'm technically able to, selling copies of Uncensored magazine. My very good friend, Jonathan Eisen, who does a fabulous publication here, on the website as well, because you've got to really support each other in every single way conceivably possible. Speaking of which, also, if you wanted to get even more in-depth background on the nature of psychopaths, how to deal with them, how to spot them, so on and so forth, you can get Thomas Sheridan's books as well. Now, getting back to the discussion, Thomas, I wanted to get your opinion and analysis of what I call proto-psychopaths, the ones who, like, have you ever been in the schoolyard, right, and there's one big bully and there's a whole bunch of cronies that he's got who are like weak, sniveling scum who do everything that he says kind of thing? That, you know, psychopath, proto-psychopaths, that's what I'm talking about. What's your analysis? Who are these people? What's their motivation? Are they psychos too?
No, they wouldn't be full-blown psychopaths. They wouldn't be, these cronies wouldn't be like that. A psychopath is very pure. If it was like, I always say if it was an element of the plutonium, you know, but the proto-psychopaths would be, they would be like the gophers. They would be the enablers. There'd be different kinds of protos. There'd be protos who are damaged people. They would have had difficult. You look at cults and you look at like sort of racist groups or extremist groups and things like that. They're very commonly filled with two kinds of people. One, educated idiots, very highly educated people with really good academic backgrounds, but they lack a sort of a social grace, a sort of a social intelligence, and they're very easily manipulated by psychopaths, because a psychopath likes to have smart people with, like, you know, with letters after their names around them to make them look like they're really in clever company. But these people would be almost like Asperger types. They would be very, they're very bad at like spotting pathology in others. They'd have to have a, you know, a document by a government or by an agency to tell them that that person was bad. They wouldn't have any sort of natural social intelligence. And the other type they'd surround themselves with would be people who were very damaged. They were maybe abused as children, or they had a really bad heroin problem, or they had a really, you know, a difficult life growing up, some kind of trauma. And so they're very easily manipulated, because a psychopath will give them the answer. The psychopath will make them feel special. So the protos are usually, they're usually psychopathic in behavior, but they're not psychopaths as such. Sometimes it can be difficult to tell one from the other. I always say the main one is that the protos generally don't plan. And generally, you look back on their lives, you can see that they were probably quite normal growing up, or they came from a very bad background, or a very disadvantaged neighborhood. You know, like gangs, like street gangs and stuff, they'd be full of protos. If you get those people away from the psychopath, if you get those people into a healthy environment where they were actually bonding with others who are like decent people, they would change. So, but the psychopath would never change. The psychopath would never, you know, it would always only see itself and its own needs as the center of the world. Protos are generally damaged people. And that's why I have sympathy for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to have sympathy for them. But at the same time, because they're under the influence of a psychopath, they will do their bidding, and in some cases very nasty things, like, I don't know, let's say you got somebody who runs a business or whatever, and they tell one of their little proto-scum to, I don't know, attack this person, you know.
Yes, exactly,
say bad things about them behind their name, do their bidding, as it were. Like, I'm a real psycho, and I really want to destroy this person, but I don't really have the time, and more to the point, it'd be a hell of a lot more damaging to that person if it was just not just me attacking them, demonizing them, stealing their ideas, swiping their websites or whatever. It'd be great if I had a whole team of people attacking them and coming at them from every angle. Would they delight in that kind of torture sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's happened to me. And that doesn't make the protos, you know, you know, less culpable or guiltless. They're still guilty at the end of the day. It's just that they weren't the one who planned it in the first place. They're the flying monkeys that the monster sent out. You know, it's almost like they flick scabs off their body towards you, infected scabs off their body towards you. That's what they try and contaminate you. That's really what it's like. Yeah, that's very common. That's exactly what they do. And the protos who do this, they're still guilty. That's the end of it. They're still guilty. You see, I have this theory, right? I have this theory, and you know, I can't scientifically prove it, but I can prove it in my heart, that, you know, in my intuition, and also by your anecdotal observation evidence, that when a psychopath is the head of a sort of a structure, it's and once they sort of infuse, or you know, through osmosis, they distillate their psychopathology within the culture of that sort of organization, of that sort of paradigm, it literally becomes an infection that spreads. It's a consciousness parasite, and it actually does spread from one to the other. Now, does it spread as a disease or an organism? I don't think so. There's no proof that, but it absolutely spreads in terms of like brainwave patterns. The protos are such mindless morons at this point that they become all they are simulacres of the actual pathological, psychopathic overlord that rules above them. His mandate becomes their culture. It feeds down, it drips down to them. And that way you have this sort of swirling of kind of a pollution of psychopathology within a social circle. And and it's like a disease. It brings us back to the spiritual thing again. The Gnostics, who were the sort of like an early Christian sect, they believed, they spoke about these things called the Archons. And what the Archons were was a mind parasite that infected bureaucracies. In their documents, they used to talk about things like places like Alexandria and Jerusalem were filled with Archons. What they were saying was that the sort of bureaucratic structures in those urban areas were infected by this mind parasite, where the Caesar at the top, or the local Roman governor, or whatever, the Alexandrian governor, he was a psychopath, and his infection, you know, polluted the rest, and they all became what they would call archons. They were infected with a mind parasite that, according to their own documentation, was basically a description of a psychopath.
Like possession.
Absolutely like possession. A disease of the mind. You know, like the way, you know, the early words for psychiatry and psychology, they talked about diseases of the personality. Well, it's the same kind of idea. It's a disease of the pathology. It spreads like an infection. That's why I always say to people, you know, if you're in these situations, go away. Just run. Just do never look back, because you might become polluted by them too. Even if your heart is in the right place, and even if you're good, the energy and the culture and the disease spreads. And you look at this world today, you look at these, you know, you look at the way these politicians behave. It's always the same idea. There's a couple of psychopaths at the top, and even if the politicians and the like senior civil servants below them are not necessarily psychopaths, they start emulating the pathology of the ruler. It's like, you know, the queen bee, or the king bee, or the, you know, it feeds its disease. I wouldn't say it's a disease. It feeds its consciousness onto the others. There's nothing good comes from being around a psychopath. Nothing at all. There's just no good in it.
Well, conversely, that means there's an awful lot of good by hanging out with good, decent, caring, creative, loving people, right?
Absolutely, and that's your duty in life. See, people always say to me, how do we fight the psychopaths? I always say, well, no, our job is not to fight the psychopaths. Our job is to find the good guys.
You know, that's actually quite an important point as well, because I don't know. As I said before, the only way to rid yourself of one of these people without any backlash is to have them killed. Look, somebody once said to me, Vinny, why don't people assassinate these people who are in the New World Order, the big bankers and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and all that? You know, why haven't they been killed? And I said to him, bro, it's simple. Only a good person would want to see those really bad people get killed. But good people don't assassinate people.
Precisely.
Right? You can't win at their game. That's why it's their game, right? So the ultimate conclusion is they play their games, we play ours. Listen to the
get off the chessboard.
You can. My very special guest, which is incidentally a black and white Masonic checker, my very special guest is Thomas Sheridan from thomassheridanarts.com. He has written 3 books, of which are all probably pretty good. I don't know because I haven't read them, but I've talked to the guy a number of times. He speaks very well. People who speak very well tend to be good authors as well. You know, it's pretty straightforward. And he's with us for another whole hour, ladies and gentlemen. So if you want to call in, the number is 218-339-8525 to answer your questions about psychopaths in your life. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Okay, my very special guest, Thomas Sheridan. ThomasSheridanArts.com is the website. Now, I don't know what more questions to ask you, Thomas. I've basically gotten what I wanted. However, there's another element here that just occurs to me now, is that how do you spot the symptoms of psychopathy in yourself? How many other different ways are our lives infected? Because you were talking about proto-psychopaths in the last segment there. So, you know, how do you find out whether or not you are a proto-psychopath? Do you notice that your thinking has changed, or you start to have these compulsions that are not your own, a reality that simply doesn't exist, seems to be your motivation sort of thing?
Yeah, there'll be a lot of those kinds of things. An ego running wild would be a common one. But another one that I noticed was that you would start making – you look at your friends. You know, look at the people you become friends with. You know, if you're hanging out with people who are all like jerks and superficial, and they're all like, you know, arrogant and nasty, if they're involved in things that are unethical and then are trying to pass it off as being spiritual or enlightened, that's a good way to think it. And that doesn't mean you're becoming a psychopath. No one becomes a psychopath. You just, you know, the only psychopaths are born, the rest of us are normal. But, you know, we can become, everyone in our lives at some point has been a jerk or a creep. That's just how it is. But when you're in a psychopathic situation, like a culture, you know, that kind of a thing, you have to be very careful. Again, it will infect you. It doesn't mean you're becoming a psychopath. It just means it's creeping up on you, and you're sort of, you're not being true to yourself. You're not being honest with yourself. You're not following your own dharma in life. You're following your ego. There's nothing wrong with your ego. It's just that that's the only thing in the driving seat. So look at the people around you. If you're working in a job and your old friends have kind of vanished, and you're surrounded by, you know, people who are very aggressive, nasty, self-absorbed, narcissistic, you know, thrill-seeking, it's, you know, that's not a good idea. If you're also involved in a religious community, this is a really good one. A lot of people, you know, don't realize how psychopathic religious communities are. They're probably the most psychopathic of them all. You have to be very careful. If you get, you know, if you're a Christian or you're involved in some kind of like spiritual group, you'd be very careful, because a lot of these spiritual groups are like that. They do wicked and cruel and, you know, malicious things, and then they think it's okay because, you know, they're spiritual. You know, it's almost like I say, you know, they stick the knife in your back and they say namaste to your face. You know, that kind of a thing. You never get, you know, that kind of thing. Be very careful. This is a real sort of like devil's kind of hole to fall into. You know, so look at the people around you. Are they creative? Are they kind? Are they feeding you? Are you trying to impress them? That's a good one too. If protos are, they never give you energy. They just take it.
Same with psychopaths. So are you constantly trying to appease them? Are you constantly trying to look cool? Are you feeling insecure around them? You know, this is important stuff, because if you're with people who are sort of like on your level, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, whatever, it's never a give and take. It's you just relaxed. You're just at ease. You're never trying to impress them. They're never trying to impress you. They take you for what you are. You take them for what they are, and that's the end of it. When you're in a situation where it's sort of like a vampiric, idea, where you feel like you're having to be somebody, or you're having to play a game, or you're having to sort of live up to their expectations of you, whether they be spiritual, following a spiritual canon or a creed or a dogma, whether it be a sort of a high-rolling big business thing where you're like involved in these sort of like, you know, unethical business moves, and then you go at the end of the weekend with these people and you get coked up and you like that kind of a thing, and it's all very high intense instant gratification. If you see yourself falling into that trap, this is a moment where you must start to self-reflect. You must start to like sit, look at yourself and say, am I on a path here? You know, a great way is talking to yourself. Am I with the right people? You'll probably find when something goes wrong in your life, suppose like a family member passes away, or your wife becomes sick, your boyfriend becomes very ill or has a car accident, the ones who really care will actually go and help you. Someone years ago in New York said to me, the real difference between a fake friend and a real friend is that if your car breaks down on the highway, a fake friend sends you a taxi, a real friend comes and collects you. So always observe the people in your life and measure yourself according to them.
Yeah, I was just thinking about my mates. So I got like three mates pretty much at the moment. You know, you usually can't maintain too many close relationships. I mean, I've got acquaintances and friendships with people from all over the world of all different walks of life, but there's three people that I principally hang out with, basically principally because of proximity. There's my mate Jono, who's been my mate for a very long time, and when I was a broke-ass fracker on the radio, and I really couldn't afford to feed myself for most of the time, he'd see me every other week, every other day, and take me out for food or take me to the movies or out for coffee or stuff like that, because he had the resources, and we were good friends, and we can sit together literally for like an hour in silence, not saying a word and not get uncomfortable, kind of thing. And there's my mate Mike, who's a really good guitarist, and we get together at his house usually on the weekends and play some music together, record stuff, and come up with new songs, and pretty much every other week we create something. And then there's my mate Dan, who's always been very generous and has always invited me around to his place and stuff like that, you know, giving me coffee and what have you, and showing me new stuff on the internet and asking me questions about, you know, the radio show and what have you. And I was just thinking, you know, you can't really maintain too many intense relationships. It's just not possible, like in terms of the time involved with being involved with people. But I think I've actually got a really good group of friends, you know, at the end of the day. And there was a time earlier on, a couple of months ago, when I was going through some real harsh times, and you would not believe, Thomas, just how many emails, phone calls, Skype chat messages I had from people just going, oh my God, Vinny, are you okay? You know, it was great. And I've suddenly realized, you know, after having this conversation with you, how freaking blessed I am to not be surrounded by superficial fracks, basically. That was half the reason I got out of the general workforce in the first place. I couldn't stand any of them. They weren't freaking real.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you have a crisis in your life, you discover who your real friends are. It's as simple as that.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, here's the Vinny Eastwood methodology for finding out who your real friends are. Mess yourself up big time, okay? Like, fake a foreclosure, or fake a death in the family or something like that. all those people who call you up and try and support you and stuff like that, you go, okay, you stay on the friends list. The people who don't say a freaking thing to you and don't help you out at all, and if you tell them about it, they go, oh, yeah, well, that's bad, and don't really care, never see them again.
A good marker in a proto as well, I found, is that there's also a kind of a proto who loves sharing their problems. They're high drama, the high drama proto. Everything's high drama. And they'll give you this, like, oh, my life is terrible. Oh, everything's bad. Everything's rotten. And then you'll turn around and say, you know, something happened last week. I have this, I'm getting these really strange headaches. And then suddenly, oh, yeah. And then they go back to talking about themselves.
Yeah, that's called being egocentric.
Yeah, they suck an energy from you. That's all they want.
Yeah. See, and this is a good thing, is another good piece of advice as well. Don't complain about your own problems too much, you know, unless you actually really need help with them. I found women do this a lot. Have you noticed that, Thomas? They're more than willing to discuss their problems and the things that have frustrated them during the day. And then you go, okay, baby, I'll try and sort that out for you. And she goes, no, don't. She's just like, what, are you addicted to the problem? What are you allergic to solutions? What's going on here?
Allergic to solution. I like that's a great title for a song.
Yeah. In fact, I'll write that down. Allergic to solutions. And I will see if I can come up with some lyrics for a song like that. There we go.
Well, allergic to the solution sort of sums up society, doesn't it? It's like, you know, and it also sums up a lot of sort of alternative sort of like movement as well. There's a lot of people out there within the scene are obsessed with the negativity, with the sort of like, you know, everything's a problem. And they don't want to talk about the solutions. It's all doom. That's a good angle to play into it. They're allergic to the solution, but boy, do they, you know, are they addicted to the doom?
Right. So you're allergic to the solutions. You're focused on doom. Yeah. Hey, here's the other part of it as well. I find it very ironic that if you talk about problems, let's say we're talking about psychopaths as a problem facing society here. Are we offering any solutions? And we've offered some very, very simple ones here. For example, stay the frack out of their life. You know, don't, if they steal something from you, take something from you, wrong you in some way, you will never get justice. Just move on. Find good, decent people. And that's basically the best you can hope for. Because, you know, you can't think like them, all right? Just think about this. Let's say somebody did something bad to you, right? What's the worst thing you'd do to them? You'd expose them, maybe do a YouTube video about them or whatever, okay? That's about the worst that you'd do. This person will kill your children, okay? Don't freaking do it. I can tell you from experience. You can't beat them. Yeah. You'll only wind up killing yourself. And all
that's why people who want a showdown with the globalists, I don't think they fully understand what they're dealing with. You know, yeah. We see a lot of these truthers who make these videos where they show you their weapons, especially the ones in America where they show you their guns and weapons. I mean, that's their own business if they want guns and good luck to them. But they, you know, I'm ready for the new world order kind of thing. No, they will erase you like, you know, a gnat. You don't think that they're worried about it. You know, they won't come with you with guns. They'll do something like they will put, you know, mercury in your drinking water, and that'll be the end of you.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
They come at you sideways, and they use best part of yourself against you.
Yeah, and they do it very businesslike and casual. Nothing to it. You know, just like when you see the Nazis and the Holocaust and all the murders of people in Russia and Ukraine, the paperwork became burdensome. So they hired IBM to develop a computer software system that could properly run a database on who, how many people they killed, who they killed, and why. It was just business. It was just like, no, you know, the concerns weren't humanity or ethics. The concerns weren't, you know, decency or the sheer evil of it. The problem was administration. So the psychopaths and the Nazis just came up with, say, let's contract out IBM to build a computer system.
Yeah. That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how they think. It's they're not like us. It's just business.
Now, here's another thing. I'm a businessman by nature. I'm entrepreneurial and what have you. For me, business is a different thing. For me, business is about creating something that doesn't exist and satisfying a gap in a marketplace. You know, like the show, for example. There's very few truth or radio shows that are based on, you know, full-on emotional transparency and a bit of comedy. You know, I don't see that very often because, well, basically, I'm really open because I want people to know what makes me tick, so that if I'm ever in trouble, they'll know about it. Or if I'm ever acting like a douchebag, they'll pull me up on it. You know what I'm saying? You got to be really, really open, at least in my opinion, in this type of format, if you want to stay yourself. Because that's another great fear that I have, and I think this happens to a lot of people. And I was talking to Roy from Rush FM down in Hamilton about this the other day, is how having any kind of fame or having any kind of recording device like this microphone right here, that's something that can turn you into a monster if you let it.
Well, if you let it. Just like fame can do that. Just like having a drop-dead gorgeous like model girlfriend can do it to you. Just like cocaine can do it to you. Doesn't mean you have to go that road. That's a choice. That's a choice. And I'm glad what you said there about business and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm a business person too. But I'm a merchant, just like you're a merchant. See, the thing is that, like, human beings are business people, but only psychopaths create corporations and conglomerates. You understand? That's a difference. That's the big difference. Conglomerates and big corporations are psychopathic. Business is just like human beings trading. You know, that's why I'm a big believer in small business, helping a small business locally. I mean, that's another thing, too. A good way to fight the psychopaths is not to stockpile weapons, but it's actually shop at the shops in your local community and don't be buying things on the internet, unless you can't get them locally. But, I mean, like, this is why the globalist psychopaths hate cash, because when you have cash in your pocket, where does that get spent? It gets spent in the shops in town. It doesn't get, you know, they want you, all of us on credit cards and no cash. So, like, you know, it's good to have both. It's good to have all the different means. But you see, the whole thing is that we have to learn to use their weapons against them, not to become like them. And that's why I'm a big believer in things like, you know, small business. Small business is wonderful. I think, you know, more people that are breaking away from the system, from big corporations leaving them, and starting their own little shops or stores or, you know, whatever, little software companies or little development businesses, radio shows, good luck to them. That's the way to beat the globalists.
Yeah, I mean, my girlfriend Sarah, she just started up her own business doing gardening for people, and now she's got, you know, more than enough jobs to support herself, less than a month after quitting a job for a massive, massive gardening company that had a big reputation, you know, because people like the fact that she's nice and she gets the job done well. That's business, baby. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. If you subscribe for as little as $1 a month, you could subscribe for up to $100 a month if you really felt like it, if you think the show's that really important to the survival of humanity, which it is! It is! I'm telling you! We'll give you some commercial-free archives. So if you don't have the time to listen to it live, it cuts out nearly 30 minutes of listening time when you cut out advertisements for a two-hour show. You know, it actually saves you time. So think about that. You compile that. Half an hour a day, if you're listening that much, winds up being 2.5 hours a week over a month. That's 10 hours of your time that you've saved for like $1 a month. it's actually a really good deal. How many people get paid like a dollar for 10 hours of their time? I don't think so. So go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, donate or subscribe, because, hey, listeners are my employer. That's my philosophy. If you tell me to go interview somebody, I do it. I'm following your orders. Unless, of course, you know, the orders are completely unreasonable and you're nasty and insulting me and stuff like that. And in fact, that happened to me earlier today as well, Thomas. Somebody got really angry with me and flew off the handle because I don't know what I did. I think they sent me an email requesting that I come on their radio show or something, and I didn't get it. I'm more than a couple of months behind on answering emails, some longer. You know, I'm sorry, I'm just really overworked. Yet they took it as a personal offense and accused me of purposefully ignoring them, and then started launching into a tirade of abuse. I was like, what did I do? You know, I feel like Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm. What is the problem with these people? Why is it that somebody thinks they're so important that for another person to perhaps not listen to them or not answer an email or something like that in a prompt enough fashion for them, that it's some kind of personal vendetta against them? What is that?
They don't understand that, like, when you get a little bit of fame, even a little bit, you get massive amounts of emails and private messages, and it's very difficult. I mean, I've got a huge backlog, but I really work hard to try and be a regular fella. I mean, because that's what I am. I enjoy that. I don't want to be detached from other people. I know you feel the same. It's just that you just want, I enjoy being just me. But when you open your email box in the morning, or you open your Facebook PM box, and it's like, you know, 60, 50, 25, 40 messages there, it's very difficult to answer them in the course of a day. And I think people, their feelings get hurt. I don't think they mean to be bad, but I think if they realize just how many emails we get, it was explained to them, they don't understand. They'd get it, but they just don't know, you know, how many demands are made upon you when you get a bit of a profile.
Well, I asked my listeners about this, and one of them threw up a familiar page to me. It's a Wikipedia entry on narcissism. And I remember it was a while back, Thomas, I sought your counsel because I saw this Wikipedia page and all these symptoms of narcissism, and I go, oh my God, I'm a narcissist. It scared the hell out of me. And then I went to you and you said, hey, it's just like the Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, list of things. Are you an alcoholic? Are you an alcoholic? According to them, everybody's a freaking alcoholic.
Yeah, and everybody's narcissistic to some degree. Anyone who says they're not narcissistic is a liar. There's different kinds of narcissism. There's benign, I've got an article on my website about this. There's benign narcissism, and there's pathological narcissism. Benign narcissism would be something like what Bruce Lee had. Bruce Lee arrived in America, he wanted to be a star, he knew he was the best, and he was the best. And he achieved it. Is there anything bad with that? No, it's all good stuff. It's all great stuff. That's healthy narcissism. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing bad about that. He actually, you know, he made lots of money, but he gave lots of people work. And his narcissism led to, you know, Chinese people, Orientals in America having a much better image than they didn't have. Say Muhammad Ali, I am the greatest. Well, guess what? Muhammad Ali was the greatest. Case closed. Doesn't make him a jerk. I mean, there's a guy who, even with Alzheimer's or whatever he has, Parkinson's, spends the rest of his life working for charity. You know, it's this healthy narcissism. And then when it goes really bad, it goes really bad. So it's like everything in life. We always have to constantly self-refer ourselves. And this goes to when we're looking at people and thinking, is this guy or she a psychopath? You know, we can't be assuming that they always are. We have to sit back for a second and say, oh, well, maybe I just don't like them, or maybe they pissed me off about something, or maybe they upset me in the past and I'm being a bit harsh. So self-referral is the most important thing you can do in your life, both for yourself and both for your relationship with others. And yes, you're absolutely right about those Wikipedia pages. We all have those things. We've all demonstrated about one part in our lives, but they haven't run away. It's not. It's a difference between, you know, smoking heroin once just to see what it was like, and then becoming a full-blown addict. It's, you know, injecting yourself, you know, in a shooting gallery somewhere. It's a different thing. You know, nobody is perfect. Nobody is a saint. Everyone is narcissistic to some degree. Yet we must measure, we must exercise a measure of self-control. You see, we didn't come in this reality to be victims of it. We came into this reality to master it.
Yeah, I do believe that I'm one of those benign narcissists to agree. You know, I've got a very high opinion of myself and what I run myself down a lot, but that's just to keep myself in check, because, like, unless other people criticize me, I don't really know how to. And I think that's why I make friends with such honest people that that pull me up on everything, because I just, you know, fear of, I don't know, letting my ego take over or something. You know what I mean? Like, you want to surround yourself with other people that don't. Well, you know how big bad businessmen, surround themselves with yes men. Yeah. I do the direct opposite. I make sure that I surround myself with half yes men and half no men, like half to be the cheerleaders and half to pull me up when I'm really going astray, sort of thing. And if I'm doing something right, they'll all be in agreement, but if I'm doing something wrong, half will say yes, half will say no, and I'll usually listen to the people who are saying no.
Yeah, well, and also in your business, an element of narcissism is a good idea as well. It's just how it is. I mean, it's hard to get on the radio 5 nights a week. You almost have to be your own cheerleader in a way. So that's not pathological at all. It's healthy. It's just part of your what you need to do. Just like a footballer or a rugby player, before he goes out to play a game, you know, he gets all wired up, he listens to the coach, they all pat each other on the back and they get all fired up, you know, we're the best, we're going to win today. That doesn't make them evil, that's just what it takes.
Oh, and the huge quantities of encouragement you get from all these emails and messages, if you get the chance to actually go to them, it's really kind of uplifting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, but unfortunately, when someone gets upset, it's just human nature to kind of remember that one, isn't it? You know,
always, always. I get like 60 messages saying, Vinny, you're great, I love your show, you've changed my life, it's been better, and one guy's a douchebag to me, and I forget about all the rest of them.
I know, yeah.
What the hell is that about?
It's, I don't know, that's an insecurity kind of thing, isn't it, I guess? It's almost like we have an innate kind of need to want to please everyone, where a psychopath has an innate need to only please themselves.
Well, maybe there's a lesson to be learned from that. What is it? If you're trying to please everybody, psychopaths are only trying to please themselves. I guess it's actually really about being part of a community, don't you think? And if you're, let's say you're in front of a town meeting or something, and the crowd's roaring with laughter because you're cracking them up. Or, on the other hand, if they're roaring and just going, boo, boo, what kind of a different sensation does that have to you? And you'll always remember the boos, but you'll never remember the cheering and the laughter. And I think it's because that's a little bit traumatic. Do you know what I mean? People tend to remember trauma much better. Like, I remember watching this television program and it was talking about extreme weather events and its effect on people's memory. And there was this one lady who knew exactly what floor on the parking building her car was, exactly what numbered space it was, and exactly what color the pole nearest to her car was, and exactly how far it was, right? Just because she got hit with a tornado that day, you know? Yeah. And all of a sudden, all your senses and all your memories come aligned. And people often don't know the difference. Like, if you've been cheated on before, for example, and your new partner starts exhibiting similar things to your previous partner, you know, like working late nights, so on and so forth, you know, classic move by somebody who's cheating on you, you'll suddenly automatically start accusing that person of cheating on you because they've been shafted round before. All these bad things that happen to you come back. It's like we can't get over it.
Yeah, we're almost like, you know, we almost like record our trauma and hold on to it very deeply. I think also that comes from our education system. I think the reason why we can remember a small amount of, you know, we can be traumatized by a small amount of criticism in the face of overwhelming accolades comes from our education system, our indoctrination as kids. You remember, like, you'd get, like, those A, B's and C's and all these subjects, and say you get an F in French or maths or some other subject like that, and you're judged according to your negative, you know, scores on your test sheet. This evil education system we have, I think that's what screws people up. I think if people didn't go to school, they would take the you know, the positive comments and the negative ones, you know, with a pinch of salt, and just be with them in a neutral kind of way. I think education is the real cause of that. The whole thing of exams and tests, and, you know, it's really screwed us up as people.
There's something the Greek says. He says, the most degrading thing you can do to somebody is degrade them on something.
Yeah. Degrade. Great. Excellent. Yeah, that's brilliant. Yep. That's schooling. Schooling is psychopathic. I mean, you know, state education, you know, that was invented by the Prussians in order to, like, create troops in the 1800s or the 1700s. And that's why it was so successful that they, you know, they batted the crap out of the French in the Franco-Prussian War, that education system was adopted everywhere. Testing, evaluation, grading. Smart kids end up becoming, you know, tradesmen, or sorry, become civil servants, and they become like lawyers and professionals. Kids who aren't academically as clever or artistic, they put them into trade schools. That was all invented by a sort of a very vicious Prussian aristocratic system back in the early 1800s. You know, to actually create warriors, so they wouldn't, when you go into military service, they wouldn't require basic training, as they'd already been mind controlled and hardened up. And it was so successful for them in the Franco-Prussian War that it was actually incorporated to every single Western country after that. See, education is really damaged us in many ways, and it's also made us more vulnerable to the psychopath. You know, that's one of the reasons they get us. There's two reasons why they nail us, right? Why they get us. One is because we've been softened up by the abuses of education, the over actualization of the left brain in terms of statistics, knowledge, times tables, and all this logarithms and nonsense you learn in school. That put you in a position that where your background perception, which has now been shown in the latest kind of neuroscience thing, I have an article on my website again, that your actual right brain is responsible for your background perception. Your left brain is responsible for your immediate perception. The reason why is, if you were an ancient hunter at the side of a lake trying to spear a salmon, you'd have to also be aware that there might be a tiger behind you. I mentioned this at the beginning. But what's happened with our education system, brain lateralization has actually been damaged by the overemphasizing of statistics and numbers, and this makes us very easy to control. And the other one is entertainment: love songs, sappy love movies, and novels. Those two things together have softened us up, so the psychopath is much easier to target us.
You know, what occurred to me when you were saying that, it's like a farmer domesticating cattle. Cows are pretty dangerous if they're wild, if they've grown up in their own environments and things like that. You know, they've got horns. They'll charge you. They'll bull rush. You know, if you've ever played that game at school, you know, it's the same thing. If you get a calf from birth, and it's birthed into a herd of dairy cows who are very docile, who occasionally get electrocuted by fences, occasionally get prodded, but they more or less do exactly what they want, and they never hurt anybody unless it's really by accident kind of thing, so that the farmer can continue to milk them and eventually slaughter them and sell their carcass to a butcher.
Yeah. The sheep are like that too. I've noticed that the mountains, I'm in the mountains here, and a lot of farmers have sheep, and some of those sheep escape wild into the like top of the mountains, and they're absolute bastards. I mean, the wild sheep will like attack you. They'll actually come after you, the rams. They're very, very nasty. So it's just, that's what human beings are like, you know. They're like, we're sheep, or we're cows. We're domesticated on a tax farm called Earth.
Well, yeah, that's true. And they also favour the females and get rid of the males and the masculinity. We'll be right back.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people that keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist, parroting puppet gangster playboy scum on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Man, Thomas was just over the bridge just going, Frank, it's nearly been 2 hours already. He's like, where did it all go? Just sort of appreciating, first of all, I've got to appreciate American Freedom Radio. I mean, big ups to AFR. Those guys work a lot harder than I do. I only have to do one show 5 days a week. They have to do everybody's show like 6 days a week. It's freaking insane the amount of work those guys get done. And they archive it all at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. They're not messing around. And they do so much of it basically for nothing. And that's what's really spectacular about this network. And also, I really like the breaks, the ad breaks. If you notice, Thomas, how we've never really been cut off in the middle of a conversation that's only just starting to get going. It's more like you keep talking and talking and talking, the clock keeps going, and then, oh, there's a break, right?
I've done FM and radio, FM and AM radio all over the world, and it's horrible. Like, you know, literally 2 minutes of talking and then straight to an ad. This format is much better.
It's fucking ridiculously awesome. Why other people have not done it yet? I can't believe it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's so freaking irritating listening to the other types of talk radio without this kind of clock on it. You know, it's just so much more easy to listen to. I mean, you know, you get to really fully form ideas in a conversation, and actually it goes somewhere before you get cut off as opposed to getting cut off before you've gone anywhere.
Yeah.
It's insane. Why do people want that kind of a format? Like, I've seen some networks close down. Like, I'll go on a guest. I think it might have been Orion. I forget which network, but a terrible ad structure, and it was just annoying the heck out of me just being a guest on it. Not because the host was bad or anything like that. You know, we were having a good time. It's just constant interruption. And they were telling me that, hey, everybody's complaining about it, but the people who are running it won't change it. And then next thing you know, here's Truth or News, radio network goes down for lack of money and support.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's related, but still. Anyway, totally off topic. Ladies and gentlemen, we've only got one more segment left with Thomas. So if you've got your hand on the dial, 218-339-8525, if you want to get in and ask him a question before we go to break. Other than that, we were talking before the break about how we're basically animals on a tax farm.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's true. Yeah. That's what we are. That's the human race today, and that's why they call it human resources in a company. We're a resource, but essentially our nations, our countries, are psychopathic sort of structures, business structures, and your citizenship is little more than being an animal on a tax form, you know, a revenue beast, to a revenue livestock to produce, you know, money for the actual control system. I mean, you know, and we've got to the situation now. I was reading some horrific stories lately in the Telegraph in the UK where some baroness there has actually said that people's patriotic duty would be to start killing yourself before you become a burden on the state because, you know, you, when you get old, you get Alzheimer's and we'll be spending all this money on healthcare to keep you alive. Well, when I read that, you know, my attitude is I am a burden on the state, and I'm very proud of being a burden on the state, and I'm going to be as unruly and as ungovernable as possible. And I, to my very last breath, when I go, when I depart this reality, I will make life miserable for politicians and civil servants. So, you know, thank you, Baroness, for saying that, because you've given me a reason why we should go on. And the reason is that the state is not, you know, the state is subservient to me. I'm not subservient to the state. And I am your burden, and you better get used to it. And we all should be like that. Like, I think it was Gore Vidal who said, you know, the true mark of a patriot is someone who's very rude to their government.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the interesting irony here, is that, you know, you should kill yourself before you become a burden to the state. But the state's been a burden on my life my entire existence.
Yep. I mean, we were just talking about the education system there. There's a classic example of it. You know, when we were kids, we wanted to play in the woods. We wanted to, like, play with our dog, have a good time, go fishing, go swimming, whatever, play football. And what did we have to do? Spend, you know, many hours a day during the winter months and, you know, most of the spring and the autumn being indoctrinated by the state. The state was a burden upon us. They owe us. We don't owe them.
Yeah. And they forced me to hang out with people who sucked and were boring and stupid and couldn't teach me a frickin' thing. The only thing school taught me is that I didn't want to go to school.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I had one or two good teachers, but the majority were absolute idiots. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's true. They were just not, they were school teachers because he couldn't do anything else. It was as simple as that. And they, you know, the whole thing of, like, you know, you must be a good citizen. To me, the mark of a good citizen is someone who actually, you know, ignores the government and does their own thing and doesn't harm anybody. That's the whole thing. Don't harm anybody, but yeah, you're supposed to be patriotic, and if your country goes to war or, you know, starts trouble on an ethnic minority, that's being patriotic. I'm sorry, no, I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah. There's nothing that gets my patriotism juices flowing stronger than when we're picking on minorities. Now, the other irony is that when you get a whole bunch of minorities together and you get diversity, it actually divides the entire society along racial lines, but under the guise of everybody being accepting and playing together. Studies have proven that if a culture is basically mono, you know, there's basically one culture or whatever, the amount of social disharmony and things like that is virtually nil.
Yep.
And now what's happening in the this new great global village that we've got, talking about diversity and how good it is for everybody, crime's up. Oh, no, crime's not actually that up. It's all been going down. Fear of crime is up spectacularly. Yes,
there's another aspect to that as well. If human, it's not diversity that's the problem. It's multiculturalism, forced multiculturalism, that's the problem. Human beings of different races, religions, and groups, if they're just not forced to tolerate each other, will live in harmony, fine. You look at these amazing melting pots, Lower East Side of Manhattan, East End of London, even Mumbai, all Hong Kong, all Singapore, all these different groups live together, no problem. It's only when the government gets involved and starts forcing this thing called tolerance on everyone or forcing this political correctness on everyone, that there's a, that the problems begin. Human beings of all races, when left alone, are fine. It's when the bureaucrats, the archons, when the civil servants, and when all these quangos, NGOs, and all these government projects to integrate, to force multiculturalism come in, that the tensions begin. And that they're run by the psychopaths. The problem is not the people, not the minorities, not diversity, but this this need to force integrate them. That's the problem. And the reason, you know, you see, psychopaths are very conscious of people's differences. We're not. Children, when they're born, you can put out children of all different races in a room and they're all getting on fine. It's only when they get into the school system that they become aware that, that they're different religions and different races. That's when the problem begins. Again, the system is the problem, not the human beings.
Yeah, exactly. And we were having a discussion about race over one of the breaks, and we both kind of realized that, oh my God, if we were having this conversation as two white guys talking about ethnicity and things like that, we'd be hounded and loud, you know, and attacked and demonized and so on and so forth for being racist. When we're just talking about race, we're not talking negatively about anybody at all whatsoever. Have no problem with the people being from other ethnicities. What would be the problem? It's ridiculous. And what I found, and as you're saying that, socialism, I have seen a lot of socialist movements in this country, you know, fighting homophobia, fighting racism, fighting this, that, and the other. And it's the exact symptom that you're talking about there, forcing tolerance.
Yeah.
Tolerate everybody or else we're going to protest outside your restaurant.
Well, I've never met a socialist who wasn't born with a silver spoon in their mouth. I mean, you look at the, I mean, I'm probably going to flag, I hope no one in Ireland is listening to this. The Socialist Workers' Party in Ireland is made exclusively of people who have never worked a day in their lives. They're all like, they're all doctors and lawyers, daughters and sons, who have this idea that socialism is like, yeah, telling poor, you know, poor common people to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's nuts. Right. Well, anyway, like we were saying over the break, anybody who takes anything to an extreme is an extremist, right? An extremist, extremism doesn't really benefit anybody except somebody who wants all the power and control for themselves, like a psychopath. Thomas, today has been a really great show. Thanks mostly in part to you and the listeners for listening in. Thank you so much for doing so. And American Freedom Radio, for putting on this wonderful night for truth and just want to be out for your listening pleasure. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thomas Sheridan Art. Thank you.
Thomas Sheridan Art.com is the website. See you next week.